Truth and Transcendence. Brought to you by Yes, You Now, with Catherine Llewellyn. Truth and Transcendence, episode 37, with special guest Julie Parker. So for those of you who haven't actually come across Julie Parker directly, Julie is a healer, a visionary, and a writer. Julie facilitates the alignment of mind, body, and spirit with Pellower, energy techniques, spiritual and transformational life coaching. Raised in Australia and Papua New Guinea, Julie was introduced to spirit at a young age. Her mother, who was interested in Buddhism, theosophy, and all things esoteric, try saying that quickly, and an entrepreneurial father who made the bold decision to pack up their three children and move to Papua New Guinea in the 1960s. Julie has been an advertising professional, an international marketing professional, an aromatherapist, a business consultant, a massage therapist, a life coach, mentor, Reiki practitioner, travel consultant, aid worker, NLP practitioner, writer, business trainer, project manager, corporate troubleshooter, and more. Traversing the globe from Australia to Argentina, Vietnam to Vanuatu, if I've said that correctly, Brazil to Burma, Greece to Greenland, Cambodia to Cyprus, Ireland to India, Sweden to Sri Lanka, New Zealand to Nepal, Thailand to Tunisia, and everything in between. I'm exhausted just thinking about that. With no alignment to any particular dogma, dharma, or religion, Julie believes in universal consciousness and oneness, and our ability to access all wisdom. A quote from Julie: "We are all an expression of the divine, and our ultimate religion is love." Julie is a personal friend of mine. She's one of the most genuine people I know, with a profound sensitivity to the human condition and an extraordinary commitment to serving the highest good for all of us. She's also very, very good at what she does, empowering individuals and groups to be the best they can be. Julie's perspective is always worth listening to and invaluable for leaders right now. So welcome, Julie, and thank you so much for finding the time to join us on Truth and Transcendence.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Excellent. So just to remind us, this is the first episode of the this month's theme on Truth and Transcendence, which is this whole question of, is there such a thing as a growth mindset? Is there such a thing as being ready to grow, ready to learn, or is this not a real thing? And the reason this question comes up for me is because when I'm interacting with people and they're considering working with me or embarking on any kind of growth path, they always have that question they ask themselves: is this the right time? Am I in the right place? Have I got the right mindset? So it's a genuine thing that I think is worth exploring. And I think, Julie, you have quite a lot of insight into this particular theme, which is why I wanted to invite you. So how or when did you first notice the notion of growth mindset or readiness to grow?
You know, I think that's probably stems from childhood. Is that this idea of growth that arises, you know, some would say in the mind, but I would say in the heart, the concept of being ready to grow or wanting to grow, wishing to grow, you know, wanting to expand, I think is more a heart-based situation. And definitely as a child, you know, I witnessed that in many, many ways and experienced it in many ways. And I guess the observations at that time was that it was a very organic process that took place, whereas as we grow older in age and become more mainstream in terms of what it is that we're being asked to do, it becomes almost a step-by-step process, or we consider it a step-by-step process or look at it as a step-by-step process. But one of the things that I probably observed very early on, more so in my teenage years than at any other time, was that growth really came when I was aligned with what my truth was, or I was aligned with, you know, what called me, what stirred me. And when I was aligned with that, I had more capacity to actually take bold decisions, often seen by others as crazy decisions, to do things that were outside the box, you know, that were outside the narrative, that were outside mainstream, that called me in ways that I couldn't explain. Yeah. But, yeah, it was very early on that I really started to consider the whole concept of growth and, you know, and to put it in a box and call it a mindset, I think it really restricts what it is. I think it's body, mind, spirit, you know, mental, emotional, spiritual, physical set that, of actions and senses, etc., that causes the growth that has a step outside of what we've previously done and who we previously are.
Great, thank you. I was really struck by when you said that it more comes from the heart than the mind, which is interesting given that that term growth mindset is a well-known phrase. We don't hear growth heart set. No. We don't hear. So could you say a bit more about the relationship with that to the heart, perhaps helpful for any of us who haven't really looked at it that way before?
Yeah, I think the greatest growth comes whether you are talking about professional growth, business growth, or personal growth. The greatest growth comes when you're in alignment with what your heart is desiring. Yeah.
Ah.
Right. And when I use heart desire, I don't mean that from you know, a passionate perspective. I mean the heart desire to actually show up and be the full expression of who you are and bring all your gifts to the table, bring everything that is actually innately you to the table. And that really stems from the heart rather than the mind. But when you allow that to grow from the heart and then you have a mind that is in alignment with that, then you can take heart-based action to actually bring growth about. And the mind is an important element of it because there's no point in having heart desires without putting something into action, and the mind is required to put that into action.
Great. I understand. So it comes from the heart and the mind is utilized to follow that and bring that about, but coming from the place of the heart. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting because it sheds light on those situations where somebody thinks it would be a good idea to grow, but they can't quite find a way into it or find a way of motivating themselves to do it. And perhaps that's because it's not actually present in the heart. There's not a heartfelt desire to grow. There's more a belief that it should be done, or a kind of a mental imperative as opposed to a felt motivation.
Exactly, Catherine. You know, and I think we see that a lot in the world today because a lot of things that are proposed are proposed from a mind perspective, things that we should, you know, achieve and ways that we should achieve them are very much mind-based and they're not heart-based, and the path isn't the same for everybody and the timing isn't the same for everybody and, you know, the way, the process, et cetera, is not the same. Yeah. Everybody, we all have a unique unfolding, a unique way of aligning to our truth and to our heart desires and to bringing that forward. And to suggest that, you know, once again, to suggest that it is an ABCD kind of approach is to deny the individual nature of us as human beings.
That's very illuminating, actually, as a way of describing it. Thank you for that. So you say you started tapping into this when you were very young. Now, that didn't necessarily happen for everybody, did it?
No.
So do you have any kind of sense of how or why that took place for you in particular?
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, my parents, very much so, and what I was exposed to at a very early age. And, You know, my father is very business orientated. In fact, he's in his 80s and still working. So, you know, he has a very strong work ethic and very entrepreneurial as far as the business side of things were concerned. My mother was very artistic, you know, and very interested in other theologies and religions. And I fortunately, at a very young age, was exposed to all that. Mm. Also the process of going to Papua New Guinea when I was 4 or 5 years of age and going to school there and being, you know, immersed in the culture there, you know, looking at the tribal aspects, looking at where their beliefs stem from and witnessing all that as well as participating in all that definitely opened me in situation in ways that I don't think others would be opened if they weren't in those situations. You know.
Oh, interesting. I don't know anything about the culture in Papua New Guinea. What, could you say a little bit about that?
Very tribal culture, very, very tribal culture, very colourful. At the time when we were there in the 60s, still very, I would say, closed in many ways. There weren't that many Westerners there. There weren't that many foreigners living in Papua New Guinea. There wasn't that much development that had taken place. Things were still pretty much run as they had been for eons in terms of the tribes. We were fortunate with what my father was doing that we got to travel in Papua New Guinea, so we got to be in places where others hadn't necessarily accessed those places. And as children, you know, we were welcomed by the tribes. We were taken in by the tribes. We were, you know, encouraged to participate in activities. You know, so our perspective would be entirely different to what my parents' perspective.
Amazing. What sort of activities? I'm intrigued.
Just with the children and the crazy little things that the children would do. You know, tribal children get taught from a very early age, you know, about the techniques and the aspects of tribal living in terms of, you know, food, fun. Everything was always had a fun element to it. And I think that's a theme that's run throughout my life with all the travels that I've done is to go to some of these developing world countries that we would consider, you know, poverty stricken, or we would consider less than who we are, and yet to see people far happier, far more engaged in life, and, you know, with far more spirit than we necessarily see in Western cultures.
That's fascinating. That really is. Because listening to you, I've not been exposed to those cultures, so I can only sort of imagine. But as you're talking, I'm imagining being a child, and of course children are much more open, aren't they, to just blending in and playing in with what people are doing. And that concept of fun, that's an interesting you mentioned that, because I had that in my childhood as well. There was that my upbringing was very bohemian, but for just different reasons. And there was always that sense of, if there's a way of turning this into fun, that's what we're going to do. Even if it's something that other people might consider to be a disaster, we're going to make it into a game. Mm-hmm. And that definitely made a difference to my ability to be open to growth and to enjoying it. And I wonder whether that connects back to what you were saying earlier about the heart. About feeling at in the heart. Were the Papua New Guineans very sort of heart-led people, would you say?
Definitely, definitely. As I said, very strong tribal communities, you know, and like most strong tribal communities, very focused on the children you know, and very engaged in the life of the children. You know, they also loved to laugh. Great, colourful ceremonies, you know, that were ceremonies celebrating life and the many aspects of life and nature, you know, and to be exposed to that as a child leaves a very, very deep impression on you. And I think the one thing that you know, the one thing that really leaves an impression on me is that if I hear any kind of tribal singing that brings a resonance that is similar to the Papua New Guinean tribes, it can have me in tears, you know, at a moment's notice, because it's almost like that song of calling you home, the song of calling you back to yourself.
Yeah.
And so that had a strong impression. The same as I traveled to other countries over the years, the colour, you know, the concept of colour. Most tribal cultures around the world have this incredible connection with colour and the way that they use it in ceremonial dress, in their food, in every aspect of their life. So they're in touch in ways that perhaps, you know, Western cultures haven't necessarily allowed us to be connected in those ways, because Western cultures tend to try and fit us into a structure and to move us into that structure, even though we may not fit that structure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that sounds like an extraordinary advantage then, that you had that very fertile, creative environment around you to begin with. And I'm slightly envious, actually. Not that I would regret what I had, which was amazing, but it's fascinating to me hearing about that. And so as you then grew and became an adult and started moving into actually all these different fascinating things that you've done, and now you're working with people and empowering people in a variety of ways, what have been the most important lessons for you that you've learned over the years in regard to this whole question of readiness to grow?
I really, you know, I can sit now here at this age and say that when I look back, the times where growth was most prevalent, and I wouldn't say easy, but came about in ways that were more in flow, were the times that I was truly in alignment with myself, you know, were the times. If I've done something along the way, if I've made a choice along the way that was not in alignment with my truth or in alignment with who I am, those times have been very, very difficult, and growth has not been easy. And growth has come, you know, eventually come through struggle and pain and a whole range of other, you know, emotions. And, yeah, so if I've learned anything, it's to really foster the relationship with myself and with my own truth, and, you know, and to maintain that alignment with that inner truth, and to only move forward with choices and decisions that actually meet that.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense to me, but then I'm another practitioner. So if for anyone who's listening who may not be familiar with that terminology of being in alignment in that way, could you explain a bit more what you mean by that, and maybe give an example of a situation where you were in alignment, or perhaps a situation where you weren't, so people can sort of learn from that.
I think one of the things that you know, particularly in the business world, one of the things that the business world does is it sets a structure for people to follow a path of, you know, professional growth or professional achievement. Yeah, so there's a path that is laid out as far as a professional achievement is concerned. And you find a lot of people who follow that path and then suddenly get to their 40s or their 50s and they realize that it's actually killing them, you know, that it's suffocating them, and that it's actually constricting them and basically sucking the life out of them. You know, and these are the people that I've coached along the way who reach a critical crisis, and most of them, you know, come to me because they say they've had a breakdown. And at that very point, I've always said to them, you're not having a breakdown, you're having a breakthrough. You're finally breaking through to understanding that the choices that you have made are not in alignment with who you are. You've made choices out of a pressure to conform to something that has to be done in a certain way, rather than made choices at times that were right for you. You have situations in the business field where people take promotions not because they're ready for it, but because that's the next stage of their career path. And then they find themselves in situations that don't serve them, that cause them incredible pressure, stress and anxiety, that then results in, you know, what, as I said, what they would call a breakdown. When that, if they had stayed in the position that they were in, where they were exploring and growing, but in a different way, they would be happier. And then when they had consolidated that, they would then be able to make a choice that was in alignment with them for the next move that they would choose to make. Right. And when I say alignment, I'm talking about an internal relationship with yourself where you are not dictated by an external situation, by an external process or an external expectation, where you are not following what someone is saying is the way.
Yeah.
You are finding your own way rather than following what somebody has dictated is the way.
That's very clear. Thank you. That's very clear. And I think in your experience working with people, do you think people generally are aware of that distinction, or are people sometimes in your experience unaware of that distinction? So they think they're following their own truth, but they're not really, or they think they're following someone else's pressure, but really they're following their own truth.
Generally unaware.
Right.
Yeah, generally unaware. And once again, you know, that's a societal thing. It's an environmental thing. It's an educational thing where we have been taught for many, you know, for much of our life to seek solution from an external perspective, to find answers externally and to consider that other people know the answers rather than we know the answer to what it is that we're here to do and what works for us. And that's just an unfortunate aspect of the way society has gone, you know, over the years. Yeah. Whereas what we're currently witnessing is a resurgence of people understanding that the answers actually are within them, and that solution is not sought externally. The best solution is found in an internal relationship.
Yeah, yeah. And something just occurred to me, but it's gone now. Yes, it was the thing of, you know, often if someone's considering the possibility of opening to further growth, I think often it can seem to somebody as if what that means is that they have to learn from somebody else or from something outside of themselves. And perhaps if they look at it from the point of view of, right, I'm ready to grow now, I want to grow, and I want to learn from myself, that's a very, very different question to explore, isn't it?
It is an extremely different question to explore, and I would recommend that everybody does it, you know. And I would recommend that people start asking themselves questions instead of asking questions of people outside themselves. They ask themselves questions, and they begin by asking what I would term as reflective questions, you know, and that's even down to, excuse me, what they're experiencing, you know. One of the big things that occurs is that particularly when people go into stress and anxiety is this mindset that where they're continually rolling the same story around in their mind. When if they break that particular process and they actually start to ask questions that are more reflective, then they can get down to what they're actually feeling, what's actually going on for them, and what is real truth for them. And I'll give you an example. Say, for example, that somebody feels like they need a new, they feel like they need to do something new, to go somewhere new to break the cycle.
Break
the cycle of whatever they're doing. They might be in debt. They might, you know, it might be a situation where they've been in the same job for a long time, or they've lived in the same apartment and they think that, you know, all that is contributing to the fact that they feel stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the only way to feel unstuck is to actually move somewhere different.
Yeah, I've actually done that myself, where I felt stuck
and moved
in order not to feel so stuck. Sometimes it works, but sometimes not.
Yeah. I've done it myself, and that's why I can speak from experience of this. But we move somewhere new, and in the beginning everything seems different and we seem unstuck.
Yeah.
But then slowly, bit by bit, the same things start to occur because we haven't actually addressed the real underlying issues that were sitting there.
Yeah.
Whereas if we had asked the questions where we were before, we might have actually been able to see things from a completely different perspective and work on the things that were actually causing us to be stuck rather than thinking that it was a place
or yes. a situation. So in other words, inquiring into the stuckness rather than into what we think it is outside of us that's making us feel stuck.
Absolutely.
By recognizing that the feeling of stuckness is inside us.
It's internal. It's yeah. not an external situation.
Yeah.
It's always internal. Yeah. And, you know, any kind of growth that occurs from an internal perspective. And so why wouldn't we seek the solution from the internal perspective?
Absolutely. Well, you know, that's a very, very good question. And in fact, I, you know, if I look back at over my own life, I can see myself shaking my head and saying, well, that's a very good question, Julie. You ask me that now after I've wasted so much time trying to fix things with something outside. And I think we've all done that. And I suppose we're surrounded by messages which tell us that this, that, or the other will make us feel fantastic or liberate us or allow us to grow rather than actually looking within, as you're saying. So if you look at where we are now, you know, where humanity is now and where the world is now, and we're all doing what we're doing and living our lives, and, you know, we've got our relationship with our heart, we've got our relationship with our mind and spirit and so on. What do you think kind of collectively are the most significant personal growth questions or priorities right now? Just kind of your sense.
My sense is that a lot of people are living in fear right now for a variety of reasons. And fear can be the thing that really keeps you stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the big things that can keep you, you know, in that freeze mode. So, you know, we have flight, fight and freeze, and fear can keep you in a real freeze mode as far as making choices and decisions are concerned. And I would say to people, you need to find what that fear is. Just don't label it as fear. Just find out, you know, what that is. Have a session, you know, whether it's journaling, asking a question when you're journaling, or whether it's just an internal conversation with yourself. But find what the root of your fear is. Because if you just classify it as fear or you feel it as fear, it's never going to change anything.
Yeah.
And you need to find what it is that's actually, you know, what's the underlying motivation that's causing the fear. And it can be a variety of things. You know, we have a lot of fundamental beliefs that are formed very, very early on, and we have a lot of strategies that we use to compensate for those beliefs, and all of us do this. You know, this is part of our human experience. Yeah. And if we can find what the underlying belief is that's causing the fear, then we can make a choice as to whether we live in that or we make the choice to live in a completely other state.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we've forgotten that we are energetic beings and we can change our own energy state at any point in time.
Yeah.
We are energetic beings. We can choose to be happy or we can choose to be in fear. We can choose to be in joy. You know, we can choose to be in stillness. We've forgotten that we have this ability, and part of the reason why we've forgotten that is because we're disconnected from who we are and we seek solution outside ourselves, and we need to make that connection, and we need to start to reflect and to contemplate what's actually going on for us.
Yeah. And you're not talking about positive thinking?
Nope, I'm not.
Because some people might hear what you said and think that's what you're saying.
No.
I don't think that's what you're saying. How does what you're saying differ from positive thinking?
Well, positive thinking doesn't acknowledge what's actually going on for you. It just changes the way that you speak, yeah?
Right.
which basically is denying what's going on for you. And, you know, if you deny something or you resist something that is there, then it only grows in terms of how it's going to affect you. You have to actually look at what the reality is of what it is that you're experiencing, feeling, experience, etc. You know, you look at the reality, you reflect upon it, you contemplate where its source is, what it's coming from, yeah, and then you can make a choice as to how you shift into another state.
Yeah.
Make a choice as to which, what's your next step to actually move out of that state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think some people might have a fear that, and I've felt this, that if we explore our fear, for example, that our fear will become more overwhelming for us, you know, because often if we have fear, often we'll run from it, you know, as if we're afraid of the fear. We don't want to feel the fear. Mm. We're frightened of what it could do to us if we let ourselves feel it. We might feel completely disempowered. And you're talking perfectly casually there about, well, explore the fear and find out what's underneath the fear. So could you say something a little bit about that conundrum someone might be facing in response?
Yes, I have a little mantra, and it's a little mantra that I probably adopted, I think, in my 30s. Mm. And this little mantra, whenever fear surfaces, is that I don't attach fear as a personal situation, okay?
Right.
So the little mantra is, that is a fear,
mm-hmm.
not my truth.
Aha. Uh-huh. That is a fear, not my truth. Yes, I can feel my brain sort of twisting.
Yeah. And that is right, because what you do with that particular little statement, and I still use it to this day whenever, you know, fear surfaces, because fear does surface, you know. We live in a world where we are bombarded with things that would cause us to be fearful. So, you know, we just accept that it does surface, you know. We're carrying a lot of information in us that can be triggered at any point in time. So, but one thing I know is that fear, unless it's fear in a survival mechanism, you know, it's not based in truth, it's based in story.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's based in historical story. That's where fear is generated from a historical story, which is an underlying belief.
Yeah.
So it's not a truth. It's not a truth of a current day situation.
Usually. Sometimes it is, surely.
Yeah. Sometimes it can have happened, you know, very, very recently, but still that is triggered by an underlying belief that has occurred previously.
Yes, yeah, that makes sense to me, because if there isn't some sort of past fear-related issue that's triggered by something that causes fear in the moment, then the fear in the moment is a lot less potent and it goes away more quickly.
Yeah, it's fleeting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it lasts only as long as the danger's there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And sometimes that fear in the moment is the initial response to, oh, my God, I'm being challenged to step out. And then you go into, yeah, but that's what I asked myself to do. You know, so sometimes it can be very fleeting in that regard. Oh, hang on a minute, this is exactly what I signed up for. Yeah.
Yeah, so, there was a story we used to tell years and years ago when we were doing organizational transformation programs and talking about this whole question of hitting barriers on the way to accomplishing something you want to accomplish. And we talked about the story of a very old-fashioned idea that most people listening to this may not even remember, of the school dance, where all the girls are down one side of the hall and all the boys down the other side of the hall. And you're a boy, you see a girl you like and you want to go and ask her to dance. And the experience is you walk across the floor and all the thoughts that go through your mind and your tongue cleaving to the roof of your mouth and your knees wobbling and your stomach going through the floor and feeling like you're going to die. And yet it was actually your idea, you wanted to go across. And if you carry on and speak to the person, even if they say, not with you, which they may do, you still overcome something that was within you.
Yeah. And that's exactly it. And that is growth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that is growth both on an emotional, a mental, and a spiritual level.
Yeah. Well, and physical, because, physically,
that's right.
The energy in your body when you've actually accomplished something like that is completely released. There's that feeling of, being a giant, being much more fully oneself, having done that. Amazing. So investigating our fear, I'm just imagining how that would be if globally everyone who's experiencing fear were to investigate their fear and free themselves from the limitations of that fear, perhaps.
Yeah, and I mean that's a really good point, because fear is very limiting.
Mm.
And if we stay stuck in that, that is what limits us.
Yeah.
It's the fear that limits us, and we fear, we've been taught to fear success as much as we've been taught to fear failure.
Mm.
And often that can keep us stuck in the status quo, because we're not investigating what the underlying issue is.
Absolutely. So if we think of leaders, and I know that you have worked with many, many leaders over the years, and I think we're in a position now where leaders have got an interesting challenge, whatever their leadership role is. Do you think this is an important theme for leaders right now to explore?
I do. I really do. And just to touch on language, because language is so important as we move forward, and people are starting to understand that words actually create outcomes, and the interpretation that is attached to words actually create outcomes. And I just want to talk about the word leader and leadership for a moment, because a leader, the word leader tends to indicate that people need to be led.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when in fact I see, quote, leaders as really facilitators or space holders for people for others to move into their truth and to move into their strength, to move into their power, and people who are truly aligned with themselves and aligned to their truth are essentially giving others the ability to stand in their own truth, to align with their own selves and their own truth. And so, leadership is very much a business term, whereas space holder would be very much the energetic or spiritual term that we would use in those kinds of environments. We hold the space for people to step into their own truth. We facilitate them by asking questions of them that would cause them to have an internal relationship with themselves and to have conversation from an internal perspective.
Yeah.
And so I see leaders and leadership as people who have this capacity to, be strong in their own truth, to be strong in their own alignment, to acknowledge that they too have fears, and to acknowledge the way that they facilitate those fears, that the way that they move through them, the way that, that they are able to identify them and then move through them. And I think it's really important to recognize that no matter what position you're in this world, whether it be business or otherwise, we all face fear. At some point, we all make choices at some point that aren't in alignment with us because we feel pressured. We all are human. We all make what would be termed as mistakes, which are just another little step on the way to discovering who we really are and what we're here to be. So yeah, I'm very careful around the wording that I use with people because I don't want people to feel that, you know, they need to seek answers from somebody who they consider to be better.
Yeah. Than them. Yeah, yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. And I think the really good people, let's say people who are in leadership positions. I think the people who are in leadership positions who are the most effective and the happiest, I think are the ones who are connected to that idea that they are holding space, whether or not that particular phraseology is something that they can cope with or find completely airy-fairy. You know, I think that those people do have that sensitivity,
yeah,
and they're aware of all the ways in which they do create environment, atmosphere, culture, support, relationship. And I love how you're bringing that back to that their ability to do that comes from their ability to connect with what's true for them and be in alignment with that, which I take to mean making choices and living their lives in sync with what's true for them, as opposed to not in sync with what's true for them. And I love that thing you said about self-forgiveness as well, you know, that we all make mistakes, we do things, we say things that are not in alignment with our truth, and that's part of our growth. Ooh. And it's, but you know, it's not, so it's not a question of, oh my God, I did something today that wasn't in alignment with my truth, I must resign, I must punish myself. No, I must acknowledge it, accept it, learn from it, and move on.
And that's, I mean, I think that's where true growth comes from. You know, you acknowledge that the times that you make choices or take action that is out of alignment, you can then reflect upon what actually motivated you to do that. And then as a result of that, you know, the triggers or the red flags, yeah, that occur if you're going down that path again, and then you can make alternate choices. You don't repeat the same mistake, and that is how we grow. That is how we grow. That is how we learn about who we are. That is how we know when we are and when we aren't in alignment. And I think true leadership with people who are in alignment with their truth, who walk their talk, which is an important aspect of it, you know, they're the people who are true facilitators. They facilitate situations where others get to step into their own power, their own growth, and it doesn't need to look like them. It needs to look like the individual, you know. And that's, you know, when you look at those people, and you know, they can be in business, they can be in education, they can, you know, be in hospitality. It doesn't matter where they are. You see them everywhere in life, and those people are the ones that truly engender this safe space for people to actually explore who they are and to step into their truth.
Amazing. So people have been listening to this. So imagine there's someone in a leadership position who's been listening to this all the way through and they think, this is fantastic. Where shall I start? What could I do today to kind of start exploring and investigating and perhaps putting into practice some of what Julie's been talking about today? What would you say might be a first step for somebody?
You know, I think everybody has different things that will call to them. But one of the great things that I've learnt along the way, and it's a huge thing that I've learnt along the way, is to really honour the things that call me, even when they come from left field. And so often the things that are the greatest growth possibilities for you will not be in the field that you are working in.
Ah.
Yeah, they'll be completely outside that field because you need to step out into something that isn't comfortable. You need to step into something that isn't comfortable for you and start exploring things in the discomfort. And, for example, you know, a lot of the times when we're in business and we're working in business roles, we deny our creative abilities because we're focused solely on the business persona of who we are, when in fact, if we can get in contact with our creative aspects, and that doesn't mean necessarily painting, drawing, dancing, but it could include those, but anything that's creative, that stems from creativity, when we start to explore that, we can actually start to get in contact with who we are and realize that we are much more than just this little box that we've been standing in. And when we start to explore that, we have this capacity to really bring amazing things to the area that we're actually working in. We have this capacity to look at it from a different way. We have this capacity to feel things in a different way. And, you know, and that brings us to a point of truth. It brings us to a point of inner wisdom. It brings us to a point of alignment and recognition that anybody that we're working with isn't just this little box that we've seen them in. You know, that they're so much more than that, and that we have this capacity to bring all of them, just as we have a capacity to bring all of ourselves to something.
Yeah.
So I would be saying to anybody who's listening, if you've got something that you've been toying with that's well outside where you work, and it's been calling to you, or it's even floated through your mind at various stages, explore it.
Mm.
Go and explore it. This idea that we only do things to be successful at them has really done us a disservice. We should do things for the experience of doing them and for the experience that they bring us as a result of doing them. Yeah, it's not about the success. It's about the exploration. It's about exploring ourselves in the process of doing something that's outside what we normally do. And I think that's important. It's important to recognize that we need experiences.
Yeah.
And not all those experiences are we going to be good at.
I can certainly confirm that on my own behalf.
And that's okay.
Yeah. I love that. Thank you. That's beautiful. So we're going to be starting to run out of time shortly. If you were to cast your mind back over this conversation, Julie, what's been your favourite part of this conversation?
Actually, I've loved all of it, Catherine.
Fantastic.
I really have. I mean, I think one of the things that I really love is exploring the fact that there is no separation between the spiritual, energetic, you know, esoteric kind of approach to business and leadership. There is no separation in that. Yeah. We are one and the same. We're not business people and spiritual people, you know.
Yeah.
We are all of that and so much more. And if anything, I would say to people, do not limit yourself by thinking that you are just what you do.
Mm.
Yeah, or what you think. Do not limit yourself by that. You are so much more than that, and go and explore that. Go and explore it.
Great. Well, I'm excited to imagine what everyone's going to go off and do after listening to this. Julie, this has been absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much. I always find it fascinating talking to you. And I always learn something. So that's saying something, given how long we've known each other. So if people want to find you, where would you like them to go in order to find you?
They can find me on my Heart and Soul Matters website, or they can find me on the Pellewa Energy Healing website.
Excellent. Well, I'll put
either one.
Yeah. I'll put the links for both of those in the show notes.
Thank you.
And once again, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're very, very busy and you've always got loads that you're doing, which is, I always find extraordinary how much you manage to accomplish. And thanks again so much for joining us on Truth and Transcendence.
Thank you, Catherine. It has been such a pleasure and a joy to have the conversation.
You've been listening to Truth and Transcendence, the regular weekly podcast from Yes, You Now with Catherine Llewellyn. For more information, head to yesyounow.today /podcast.